For an hour and a half last Thursday night, a 27-year-old entrepreneur was trapped in his own car with the two suspects in the Boston Marathon bombing. Just what happened in those 90 minutes were one of the many mysteries in the aftermath of the marathon attack, but now we've heard for the first time from the carjacking victim himself. The harrowing account was told to Boston Globe reporter Eric Moskowitz, whose story on the carjacking is in this morning's Globe. Eric is on the line with us now. Good morning, Eric, and thanks for speaking with Morning Edition.
Good morning, Bob. My pleasure.
Eric, tell us how the episode began.
The carjacking victim is a guy who goes by Danny in the U.S. He's 26. He's from China. He's a Northeastern grad. And he just got a new car. He's working for a startup in Kendall. And he had left Cambridge around 10:30 to blow up some steam. And he's driving. And he's such a, really comes across as a decent person. Got a text message and, believe it or not, pulled over to the side of the road to reply rather than do it behind the wheel. And while he was stopped on Brighton Ave just by Packard's Corner, the two brothers involved in the Boston Marathon bombing slammed right behind him and pulled up. And the older brother got out, tapped on the window. He couldn't quite make out what he was saying. So Danny rolled down the window. The older brother reached in, opened the door, got in, flashed the gun, and the carjacking began.
And this began what was a 90-minute odyssey. I don't think I knew it lasted that long.
Yeah. You know, part of it, I think, was a little bit of the fog of war. When the initial details came out from the state police media statement last Friday and the immediate aftermath, they made it seem as if the carjacking had happened between 10:29 and 10:31 in Cambridge, which didn't quite explain why it would be another 2 hours until the chase and the shootout. And we come to find out that it's actually a little bit different story. That Danny gets carjacked in Brighton just before 11. They take him on a sort of a zigzagging trek. They loop around Brighton, they cross the river into Watertown. They stop in Watertown, load heavy objects that he thinks are luggage, but that, you know, we believe turn out to be the IEDs, into his car. They drive around some more. And it seems like their plan, as they tell him and as they talk in a foreign language, but he picks up Manhattan, is to go to New York. And instead, he's able to escape because the car doesn't have enough gas. And they pull into the gas station at the Shell on River Street Memorial Drive in Cambridge. And he manages to seize an opportunity and get out.
Did Danny feel like during that 90-minute drive that the brothers knew where they were going at that moment beyond the ultimate goal of apparently taking their bombs to New York City?
I don't believe so. I mean, Danny's trying to read between the lines. And, you know, what the scene played out, as he described it, is a mix of the older brother trying to instill fear in him between flashing the gun and, you know, barking commands like, don't be stupid, we'll kill you. You know, the very first thing he said to him after, you know, telling him it was a robbery was that, you know, do you know the Boston Marathon bombings? We're the guys who did that, and we just killed the cop in Cambridge. The younger brother was a little bit, Danny felt like he was sort of a goofier student. You know, as they're driving around, there's a lot of silence and a lot of zigzagging. And they actually go back to Watertown a couple times. At one point, as best Danny can tell, it's only to get some music to play in the car. I think he does think if he'd had gas, they would have gone straight to New York because they were pointed to 128 and would have gone, just got on the highway. But they stop at a gas station on Route 20. It's closed. They end up doubling back. And so as a result of the doubling back, they end up in Cambridge. As a result of ending up in Cambridge, they go to a gas station that's cash only, which leaves one of the brothers to go into the store. And Danny feels like he has an opportunity when the older brother puts down his gun to fiddle with the GPS.
And he jumps out of the car and runs into the gas station and hides in a storeroom.
He does. He does.
When the police showed up, did they believe his story?
I haven't asked that. I have no reason to doubt that they did. We have other sources who have been talking to the police. They certainly took it quickly. I mean, they asked him to calm down and take a deep breath over the phone and then in person. And at first, there were four officers dealing with him. And, you know, they took his statement there. They figured out pretty quickly they could track the car via his phone and via Mercedes-Benz satellite system. And then while this is happening, suddenly the car chase is going on and it's becoming a shootout all the way to Watertown. And so I think there was a little bit, obviously, emergency on the part of the police. But they brought Danny first to, I believe, the Cambridge police station. Then they took him out into the field, apparently to identify some suspects who were not the younger brother. And then they brought him to, among other places, the state police barracks in Brighton. And he spent 15 hours with them giving statements to local police, state police, FBI, you know, telling them everything, a lot of which informed some of the federal filings that we've seen already, but many more details come out in Danny's story.
Let me ask you one last question, if I might, Eric. Several times in your story this morning in the Boston Globe, you say that Danny felt like he was going to die, that this carjacking would mean the end of his life. Does he feel lucky to have survived?
He feels very lucky to have survived. And, you know, he's really, you get the sense when you meet him that he's a very gentle soul, and he kind of, you know, is just sort of hoping his life can get back to normal. If you can believe it or not, he did not talk to his parents about this in China over Skype until yesterday. He told his dad, and he told his dad not to tell his mom because he didn't want her to worry, and that unless his name gets out, she shouldn't have to worry about it.
Eric Moskowitz of the Boston Globe, thank you very much for speaking with us this morning about your story in the Globe today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bob.